For the last 5 centuries, the Western capitalist system has been subjecting most of the world's people to a permanent crisis of endless war, massive poverty, environmental degradation, and economic instability.
Capitalism has been built through slavery, imperialism, colonialism, and neocolonialism. More than 1 billion people have been killed by capitalism, making it the greatest crime committed against humanity.
Lately, this crisis has moved into the centers of capitalist power, North America and Europe. This documentary is about the destructive record of capitalism and the current disasters it has fomented.
You're listening to Capitalism is the Crisis, a 4-part radio documentary series. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz. This is Capitalism is the Crisis. What are the alternatives? The last episode in our series. For the next half hour, we look at the financial crisis in the United States and Spain and present alternatives to capitalism. From its beginnings, capitalism has led the world into one financial and military crisis after another, being an inherently unstable system. This is because the system concentrates wealth in the hands of 20% of humanity by impoverishing the other 80%. Enforcing this extreme disparity requires endless war. The wealth concentration itself creates more inequality and expands corruption and financial instability. The result is that for the past 5 centuries, most of the world has been in a state of crisis, marked by enormous poverty, depression, constant wars, and environmental destruction. The crisis has now moved to North America and Europe, the centers of capitalist power, which are in the grip of a disastrous recession that the Western elite appears unable to end.
Behind the economic decline of the West is the imminent collapse of the U.S. empire and economy and the rise of the global South. As the preeminent enforcer of capitalism, the U.S.'s main task has been to ensure that Western countries can grab the resources of the global South cheaply and to open up markets there to capitalist penetration. However, the last 2 decades have seen Southern countries become stronger and more assertive as the U.S. has grown economically weaker. Resource plunder and market penetration in the South have thus become progressively harder for Washington to accomplish, which has brought the economic crisis to North America and Europe. The United States, the leading capitalist power, is crippled by huge trade and budget deficits and living on borrowed money, mainly from China and Japan. Its fate is in the hands of Beijing. Most U.S. states are bankrupt.
Having looted the global South, the Western capitalists have now turned to looting their own people on a large scale, using financial fraud, government bailouts, official austerity policies, especially tax cuts, and tax evasion. Through these, there has been a massive transfer of wealth from the poor and middle classes to the rich. This class war is what the financial crisis in Western countries is mainly about. In the U.S., the subprime mortgage fraud perpetrated by American banks led to the 2008 financial crisis. The U.S. banks conned low-income customers into buying houses they could not afford and then sold the toxic deals to European banks at huge profits, destabilizing the international financial system when the loans came due and could not be repaid. This was one of the biggest ripoffs in history.
Once this enormous fraud became a massive financial crisis, instead of being punished, the criminal U.S. banks and insurance companies were rewarded with a $4 trillion American government bailout package, which was an incredible transfer of public wealth to the richest private American corporations, including Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, AIG, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, as well as General Motors and Chrysler. This showed beyond the shadow of a doubt that a gang of banker bandits runs the Western world. They control many Western governments so absolutely that they are showered with public money for committing major crimes.
Similar thievery has resulted in the richest 20% of the U.S. population owning 93% of the national wealth, not including homes. In contrast, over half of Americans feel that they are barely making ends meet, and one in five are unemployed. The phenomenal transfer of money to the rich is a major reason for the stupendous American debt load, which threatens to collapse the U.S. economy. With the rich not paying their fair share of taxes and all the other massive corporate welfare handouts, the U.S. debt has ballooned to a dangerous level.
According to Richard Duncan, a former World Bank economist and chief economist at Black Horse Asset Management, due to the U.S.'s $16 trillion federal debt, its economy is in imminent danger of going into a debt spiral, which could result in a depression so extreme that he does not think that, quote, our civilization could survive it, unquote. Agreeing with Duncan are other prominent economists, including Lawrence Kotlikoff, who served on President Ronald Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors.
Stephen Lendman is the U.S. author of the book How Wall Street Fleeces America, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class War.
The bankers were the ones who contrived the economic crisis that broke in the fall of 2007. It hasn't ended. There's been a protracted Main Street depression. Main Street depression. It's true in America. It's pretty much true across Europe. It is a nightmare, but it never gets coverage in what I call the scoundrel media. They don't explain these things. But the bankers concocted this scheme. They got government officials to go along with it. And for them, it's a bonanza. They got to consolidate and grow bigger than ever. They got to make more profits because they eliminate competition. Lots of small banks have gone under. They keep going under all the time. So you get rid of the competition, you get bigger and stronger, you have government working for you, not the people. My goodness, talk about a dream business model. But the business model for these giant banks and insurers and the rest of them, the business model is grand theft, plain and simple. There has never been a high level, at least in the modern era, there has never been a high level financial official that has gone to prison.
The capitalist looting of the U.S. economy is made possible by incredibly corrupt American governments that are bought by corporations through campaign contributions and lobbying, and in exchange implement policies favorable to them. This is the case with both the Democrats and the Republicans, the two dominant political parties in the country. The U.S. Supreme Court has removed all restrictions on campaign contributions, making obvious that the American political system represents only the rich, especially corporations.
There is a criminal nexus between government officials and corporate officials, and at the top of the corporate pecking order come bankers. America's entire electoral process is worthless, corrupted, broken. There is no possibility of a fair, free, and open election.
The 2012 U.S. elections for the presidency and Congress were particularly corrupt, with political contributions amounting to an astounding $6 billion.
Campaign contributions are nothing but bribes. Elections cannot be free, open, and fair when money controls them. And nobody gives money, big amounts of money, to politicians without wanting something back in return. You contribute so many thousands of millions to a politician's campaign and get friendly laws passed in return. And that's the dirty game. But if they play the game, they're well rewarded for it. Unless money can be gotten out of politics, it never will be open, free, and fair. It never will be less than totally corrupted.
As in the United States, many countries in Europe are in the grip of a severe recession and in some cases depression. Greece is bankrupt, while Spain and Italy are close to bankruptcy. The Greek economy is trapped in a depression, with unemployment reaching 70% in some areas. Time magazine has called this, quote, the decline and fall of Europe, and maybe the West, unquote. The deep recession in Europe is being made worse by official austerity measures, which are creating massive unemployment and enormous social turmoil. Europe erupted in anti-austerity demonstrations in November 2012. General strikes were declared in Spain and Portugal, where protesters clashed violently with police. The transportation system was shut down in both countries. Millions of Europeans participated in the demonstrations, which spread to Italy, France, and Belgium.
Spain is Europe's fourth largest economy. Unemployment in the country is above 25%, and for youth, it is 50%. Severe cuts to government welfare payments have increased poverty to such an extent that 44% of families in Spain are now in an economically precarious position. These families, which comprise 20 million people, are living on 12,000 euros a year per family, which is less than required to pay minimal living expenses in Spain. This is an unprecedented level of poverty for the country.
Dr. Carlos Muntaner is Spanish and a professor of nursing and public health. Muntaner has been working with the Indignados movement in Spain, which opposes the Spanish government's austerity policies through various campaigns. Spain is currently ruled by the right-wing Partido Popular, which took power in November 2011. The Spanish economy has been shrinking since 2010, and Muntaner believes that it is headed towards collapse.
I think there is an enormous level of frustration, anger, and desperation in a large proportion of the population.
As with the United States, in Spain there are two major political parties, the Partido Popular and the Spanish Socialist Workers' Party, the initials for which are PSOE, pronounced PSOE. Both parties serve the capitalist elite and both have similar neoliberal economic programs. As Muntaner explains, PSOE is not a socialist party at all, and its leader, José Luis Zapatero, enacted massive tax cuts for the rich.
The money interests, such as the banking, financial sector, even the upper middle class that supports them, they are very powerful in two major parties. So they both presided for cutting taxes, mostly for the rich. The leader of Zapatero, a person who, in my view, was very ignorant when the recession started, he said there was no problem with the economy, had said early on to justify the taxes that being left meant reducing taxes. So that was the rhetoric that he used. So they cut 20 billion, of course, benefiting mostly the wealthy, as usual, and that's the socialist. So with that context, it's very difficult for the average person to have any, you know, faith in government.
One of the main reasons the Spanish state was unable to handle the economic crisis, which started in 2007, was that it had already been thoroughly corrupted by the domination of the country's capitalist elite. A good example is the enormous tax fraud carried out by leading Spanish corporations. 74% of the tax fraud in Spain, which amounts to $88 billion per year, is accounted for by a handful of Spanish corporations. Losing so much income made the state incapable of handling a major financial crisis. It did not have the funds to do so.
Last year there was a whistleblower in Switzerland, and names of famous bankers from Spain came up that they had billions of euros in Sweden that were not declared. I'm sorry, Switzerland. They were not declared to the Spanish state as income, right?
It is precisely because Spain's richest companies do not pay their fair share of taxes and instead loot their country and send their criminally gotten wealth abroad that its economy is falling apart. This has happened in many other nations. The incredible amount of $21 trillion has been looted by rich capitalists from lots of countries and put into Swiss bank accounts and 80 other tax havens. This unimaginable pillage has bankrupted national economies and so been a major cause of the global financial crisis.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While there's standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds dismal. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about the revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution, oh no, talking about a revolution, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds a whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Oh, oh, no, talking about a revolution. Oh, oh, no, talking about a revolution.
Capitalism has trapped most of humanity in a state of crisis for the last 500 years, spreading endless war, massive poverty, economic disaster, and such deadly environmental destruction that in the near future, our species may not exist. If there is hope, then it lies in the efforts of progressive people all over the world to take back their societies. In the Latin American Revolution, which has liberated 10 countries in that region from what President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela calls savage capitalism. In the poor people of India, who fight for their economic rights, both peacefully and with arms. In the brave people of Iraq and Afghanistan, who continue to resist imperialist and capitalist occupation. And in the indigenous nations of Canada, who do the same.
What are the alternatives to savage capitalism? Here is Indian author Dr. Vandana Shiva, who calls for an economic system based on the earth's design, as opposed to the false design of capitalism.
So it is time to wake up to the power of earth's design, because only that economy can provide for all. Every other economy is an economy of scarcity. It's an economy which through scarcity creates conflicts. So working against the earth's design, of course, means non-sustainability, because sustainability is working with the earth's design. It is injustice because you're taking away other people's share. And it is leading to violence. So the violence that we are seeing as part of this false design, is what I can call it, is inevitable, and we have to stop it. And we can only stop it by moving, you know, first of all, being sensitive to, being alert to, being conscious to the sophistication of the design the earth has shaped. The sophistication of the way she makes the soil works. The sophistication of the way she makes biodiversity work with mutuality. The sophistication of the ways in which she recycles everything, the carbon, the nitrogen. There's reciprocity, the culture of giving back. You take what you give. And a culture of giving leads to a culture of mutuality. The giving and the cycles of interconnectedness become the ground for the flowering of diversity. So what the earth helps grow in her design is life itself. There's growth. It's not that there isn't growth. But the false design grows fictitious finance at the cost of real growth, of real people, real communities, real plants, real food. But the earth grows this by maintaining the limits. And for us as human beings, us being aware of the limits that we must maintain. The false design works on a very false assumption of limitless growth. There isn't anything like limitless growth except for the cancer cell. Only the cancer cell doesn't know when to stop growing. The final thing in the earth's design is because she produces and creates and gives for all, the way she works is through creating the commons, spaces for sharing. Whereas the economy of taking is based on the drive for privatization. I privatize the atmosphere and do carbon trading. I privatize water and turn it into a commodity. I privatize seed and say, my intellectual property right, my patent. I think this very impoverished imagination has run. I mean, I'm not even saying it's going to run itself out in the next 50 years. I think it's only being kept in place by all kinds of bailouts. Social bailouts, financial bailouts, cultural bailouts, ideological bailouts. I think it is time to sow the seeds of another world based on the Earth's design. Thank you.
That was Dr. Vandana Shiva. Next, we hear from Iraqi activist Yanar Mohammed. She grew up under the rule of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Saddam was a dictator, but he also created a significant welfare state using the oil wealth of the country. For Yanar Mohammed, socialism is the best alternative to capitalism.
When I remember the way I grew up in a place where my education was granted as at the highest levels, my job was guaranteed by the state, not for a reason, but because it is the state's responsibility. My health was responsibility of the state. And eventually, the resource of the society was mine to enjoy. And when you have your necessities in life, you can also enjoy the creativity of arts, literature, culture, and that is for everybody to enjoy. Although when I grew up under the Iraqi government, there was dictatorship in the air, but there was also this partly socialist politics that we did enjoy, where the resources of the society feeded into our well-being, into our welfare. So for me, socialism is not really a vision, because I grew up in it and I felt I was nurtured in it, and I will not have any other political or economic formula to prevail in the society that I dream of. A human being should be free economically. A human being should enjoy all the resources of the society. A human being should be free in their beliefs, in their practices, and also be supported by the resources of the society. And the state should only work as a tool to guarantee all that welfare, and not a tool of oppression, not a tool of ensuring the inequalities of the society. And people sometimes ask me, do you believe in something, as do you find something sacred? I say, yes, I find equality sacred. If you are very rich and I am very poor, this is not a society where I want to live. Everybody has to be equal. Everybody has to be free. And the right of people to freedom of expression and to freedom of equality and economic resources should be the main formula for governing the society.
Next, we go to Greece, which has been devastated by a depression which has brought 70% unemployment to some areas. Most Greeks have had their wages cut in half, and the economy has shrunk by 20%. There has been enormous resistance to this economic devastation. The country has been torn by violent demonstrations. The Greek Euro-Communist Party, called Syriza, made massive gains in the last national election in June 2012, coming close to winning it.
Nikos Lundos is an activist in the Socialist Workers' Party of Greece, a socialist communist party in the tradition of Marx, Lenin, and Trotsky. The party emerged out of the struggle against the vicious U.S.-backed military dictatorship that ruled Greece from 1967 to 1974. As Lundos explains, capitalism in some areas of Greece is already being replaced by workers' control.
What is beyond the system is a system where the needs of the people would be the first priority. And in order to fulfill the needs of the people, we have to bring democracy inside the economy. Democracy in the economy means that the producers themselves have to control what they produce and why they produce it. That means democracy inside the workplaces. And the traditional name for this system is socialism. It's not something that comes out of our mind. During the struggles in these last years in Greece, we have had glimpses of what we can do. We have examples of workers' control in several struggles in Greece. The media workers have been occupying their companies, and they have been broadcasting their own program, or they have been printing their own newspapers put under their control. The hospital workers have been have taken over hospitals and have been working them without managers and without the control of the government. We have the example of the electricity workers who were able to say that they didn't cut the power of poor families that were not able to pay up their electricity bills. They said that we control the company. We disobey the law and we won't let any of the poor be without power. So these have been examples of workers' control, and we have to generalize them throughout the workplaces and for society itself. If you think that now we have children in Greece that are fainting in their classrooms because they don't have a proper breakfast, and at the same time there are factories that produce bread and milk that are shutting down and laying off people because they don't have enough profits, our answer is occupy these factories and put them under workers' control and let them produce useful things for the society.
You have been listening to Capitalism is the Crisis. What are the alternatives? The final episode of the radio documentary series Capitalism is the Crisis.
Capitalism is the Crisis is dedicated to the memory of Ho Chi Minh.
This documentary was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Kristen Schwartz. It was written in 2012 and produced in 2013. Go to www.asadismi.ws to download the series.
Theme music at the start of each episode is The Clash, London Calling, and at the end is Pink Floyd, Comfortably Numb. This episode also featured the song Talking About a Revolution by Tracy Chapman.
Thanks to Kevin Shaw for production assistance.
This documentary was funded by Canadian Union of Postal Workers National,
CUPW Local 576 North Bay,
Public Service Alliance of Canada,
Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation,
Canadian Union of Public Employees, Local 3903,
Ed Finn,
Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association.
Thank you for listening.